The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 20% off during the month of September.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Manchester 0, Birmingham 2. City slip up at Villa, while United, curse you cruel fixture computer, face West Brom and like a deli salami gets sliced open on the counter. Elsewhere, Suarez reacquaints us with his Arsenal and Spurs and Chelsea draw with Torres in form again and looking up to scratch. There's big Champions League games on the way. Arsenal-Napoli, Man City-Bayern, Barcelona-Celtic and Juve Galatasaray with added Roberto Mancini. Spanish news, Atleti bash Madrid. As Spanish TV break out the ultimate insult for Carlo Ancelotti, Benny Hill music. And Serie A, where Roma stay on top of the Italian table after making mincemeat with the Bolognese. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Hi, everybody. A very, very packed show today. Owen Gibson joins us. Hi, Owen.
Morning.
Also on board, James Horncastle.
Hello.
And off the bench, coming in at late notice, thanks ever so much, Ian. Ian McIntosh.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great. And we actually dragged you away from doing...
You dragged me away from what I fear will be my career highlight.
All right.
A minute by minute. To commemorate the release of Green Street 3, I've been MBMing...
Green Street 3?
Oh, yes. There was a Green Street 2. I've been MBMing Green Street 1. That's what you pulled me away from. And
you
I don't think I can ever repay you enough.
Sorry, a minute by minute of what's happening in the film?
I'm 14 minutes into 1 hour and 44. I don't know if I'm going to make it to the end.
And who's commissioned you to do this?
This is the wonderful people at Mirror Sport. It's going to be all right. I know it sounds awful. It's going to be a lot better than it sounds.
So people that actually have to watch the movie. They can be your minute by minute.
I am. That's what I'm doing. I'm taking bullets for everyone.
Brilliant, isn't it?
Is Danny Dyer in it?
I don't think so, no. I think even in this canon, Dyer belongs at a higher level.
So you don't know who's actually in the film?
I know in the first one. I haven't seen the second one, and the third one's coming out, I think, in the next couple of weeks.
But I thought you said you were minute-by-minuting.
Oh, only the first one.
Oh, right.
No, this is to commemorate the third one. I'm going back to the classic.
Reminding us what happened.
Right. Exactly.
So far.
Because most people have cleansed it from their brains.
All right, thanks. Owen, what have we dragged you away from?
Workers' rights in Qatar.
All right, we're going to get back to that soon, because that's important stuff. And James?
My muesli.
Good. Right, okay, similar. Get back to that. Yeah. Probably get soggy. Let's start in Manchester with the West Brom win. Here's German Holt saying, David Moyes spent 11 years trying to get Everton above Man United. He's finally achieved it. Remarkable game, which we kind of called on the pod last week, to be fair.
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, it's West Brom's first win at Old Trafford since 1978. I mean... Just some of the mistakes made by United. I mean, you look at the goal that Amalfitano scored.
But that was fantastic from West
Brom,
wasn't
he? Was allowed to run from within his own half. The way he went past Ferdinand in particular. I know Butner was out of position and that dragged others out wide, which caused a problem. But it was just kind of so easy, really. And they had other chances.
Ferdinand, I mean, if you look at almost every goal that Manchester United conceded this year, you know... He's looked as though his time may be nearing an end, I think.
But West Brom, they couldn't score a goal until, a week ago. And now they're piling them in.
They were two fantastic goals. And you shouldn't, in clichéd fashion, you shouldn't take it away from West Brom. They played really well. But, I thought the key thing about Manchester United was how flat they looked. You know, they just looked fairly limp.
The really worrying thing was that Amalfitano, easy for you to say, it wasn't the only time they breached the midfield like that.
Sessegnon was roaring.
Wasn't he? That will wear off. I have to warn West Bromwich Albion fans, someone who watched him a lot up in Sunderland, that will wear off. But he was absolutely magnificent.
Trying especially hard.
the beginning part of a contract and the end part of a contract, and with scattered displays in between. The Viduka doctrine to professional football. But on here it was especially effective.
They've come together quite well because I think Sessegnon and Amalfitano were signed in the last 48 hours of the transfer window. And Amalfitano was saying afterwards, how quickly they've been able to adapt, because there is this kind of core of French speaking, of Sessegnon and Elke, Malumbu, and him, which is kind of easy his adaptation. And you can kind of, they look like quite a cohesive unit. I know a lot of people worried about them after losing Lukaku, etc. But again, it's going to be a very fine result, which, as Owen said, we shouldn't take anything away from West Brom. That was something Steve Clarke said afterwards. Yeah, come on, give us some credit.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about Saeed Berahino, who we all got excited about when he scored that brace? What was that? The League Cup, wasn't it? About a month ago? Against Notts County. And then he scored again against Arsenal. He's got 7 goals in his last 8 games, including under-21 appearances.
Not bad going. No, it's a great finish.
Yeah, he's on £850 a week, apparently. He's one of the lowest earners in the Premier League.
Wow. But not for long, I'm thinking.
But it's curious how Moyes afterwards is really talking up the deficiencies in his squad. You know, and it's an interesting tactic, I think, because clearly he's trying to push home the extent to which this isn't his squad and the extent to which he wished he'd add to it in the summer, which, you know,
when he said that he didn't need anybody
absolutely
in the
back then,
champions.
Yeah, but I think as a couple of people have now pointed out privately, I think his feelings were probably quite different, and you wonder if that'll come to a head increasingly if things don't improve.
Right, well, it is their worst start for 24 years. They're lying 12th. Stats also showing that he is simultaneously the best and worst new Manchester United manager of the last 25 years.
Thus proving that stats mean nothing.
Yeah. They've had no goals from open play since opening day. They've conceded 8 goals in all competitions in the last 4 games. I mean, I could go on. You mentioned
six
how this
to one for the title now already.
6-1.
Yeah.
Well, quite short, isn't it?
Yeah. You mentioned things coming to a head. This week away in Ukraine, is that a potential disaster in waiting?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that actually their best performance of the season has come in the Champions League. But, yeah, the pressure will only increase from here. I mean, we live in a short-term age now, don't we, where the pressure is piled on very quickly. And, you know, on the one hand, you think, of course, it's right to give him time. Of course, it's only 6 games and all the rest of it. But it's just his demeanour, I think, that's quite worrying. Whereas he always looks so in control at Everton, already has slightly the look of a frightened rabbit.
Well, you can understand why. I mean, it's plainly not his fault. A lot of people talking today about the problems that have been building up at that club for years now, masked by the brilliant management of Sir Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, fantastic sense of timing, as a lot of people said at the time, you know, the right time to go, clearly, because he's left a squad that was clearly ageing and had holes in it.
And you look at the investment for a club of that size as well. Andy Green, who tweets under the name Anders Red, a very good financial blogger, he was saying that the Glazers have now taken around £500 million out of Manchester United since they've been there. Imagine that being spent on players. And you only have to look around Europe at the summer transfers. Cavani, Falcao, Bale, Neymar. That's the level...
Jovinho.
That's the level Manchester United should be at.
I don't know why this is actually, but anyway, go on.
And who's Manchester United's biggest summer signing? Marouane Fellaini. Yeah. A player who's good, but he's not in that class.
And there's always been this disconnect between the fact that Glazers say they're prepared to spend big for the rest player, and yet they never quite buy them, you know. And again, the fans will be looking at where that Ronaldo money went and all the rest of it, and quite rightly, really. I mean, if they claim to be one of the biggest clubs in the world, which they obviously do in their endless marketing literature, and when they're floating on the US stock market and all the rest of it, then they should be competing with the biggest clubs in the world for the biggest players.
I can't for the life of me understand why they didn't. This was the summer to set a marker down. This was the summer that they were at their most vulnerable. I'd have thrown £100 million
at it. Previously, the story was that they had been out for big players, but they just completely cocked it up in terms of their transfer dealings. So the Fabregas thing went south. Their attempts to get hold of other players went south. This supposed £120 million offer for
Bale.
I'm not sure if it was euros or pounds, but for Bale, so that it wasn't that they weren't willing. It wasn't stinginess. It was incompetence.
I think some of that probably was the case. But the conspiracy theorists will start wondering whether how real some of those attempts were, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. Shakhtar Donetsk themselves coming off a disappointing result, only 2-2 in the Donetsk derby. And they've sold off a lot of players as well, but they've still got 10 Brazilians on their books, including former Arsenal favourite Eduardo, who's officially Croatian, points out producer Ben. Thanks, producer Ben. James?
I mean, they had a good result in their first Champions League game against Real Sociedad, but I think that was where the result was quite a false one, because they were outplayed for large stages of that. But, I mean, although they've lost players like Fernandinho, Mkhitaryan, I think... Luchescu is a wily manager. And,
Is that how you pronounce it? Mkhitaryan?
How would you pronounce it, Jim?
I don't know. Most people say Mkhitaryan, but I think that's just...
Mkhitaryan sounds... Yeah, it's got a lovely sort
deceptively
of...
easy, isn't it? Mm. Mkhitaryan. Oh, with that. Well, it's not easy to go there, is it? Donbass Arena?
No, I think in the group stages last season, there were... I think many people thought they were a dark horse. I mean, it was just unfortunate that they... they drew Dortmund in the round of 16. Because certainly against Chelsea, they were excellent.
I remember Jonathan Wilson was on TalkSport, and he was in there as the Eastern European expert, and I think it might have been Keys and Gray, actually. He said, is there a chance that Shakhtar Donetsk can win this? And Wilson being Wilson was absolutely baffled. He said, it's the other way round. You should be asking me if there's a chance Chelsea can win this. Because this is the game that no one ever really quite takes Donetsk seriously, and yet their record at home is unparalleled. This is a horrible game for United at this time.
All right. Looking forward to seeing that one. Meantime, City have a bit of a tricky fixture as well, hey? They're only at home to Bayern Munich, but at home they're okay. It's only on the road they have problems. Why is that?
There could be millions of reasons. I mean, the mentality seems a bit skew. If there might be a certain sense that they're playing teams that they should be able to beat quite easily. It's like with David Moyes, if you strip away all of the emotion, it's very, very early in the season.
To a large extent, there's a lot of experimenting with combinations, and he's trying to find his best team and all the rest of it. And sometimes it clicks, as against United, and sometimes it hasn't.
And this was different, perhaps, to the other away defeats, in that while against Stoke they looked really ropey, and Cardiff obviously gave them a bit of a battering as well. This time they pretty much dominated, but Villa were just very, very good at taking their chances.
Well, that's right, but also there were still those defensive worries, and everyone look at Hart again in particular. I mean, the winning goal. It was.
I loved that goal. That was great.
But you've got to.
Brad Guzan pumps it up.
Two touch football.
Fantastic. Yeah.
It's quite interesting because City, I think, only made one change from the team that obviously hammered United in the derby. Whereas Villa were without Benteke. Everyone thought they were going to really struggle over the next 6 weeks. They were also without Agbonlahor. So, again, you know, sort of credit to the little guys. I mean, it is quite worrying how, going into this Champions League week, I mean, it's great for the neutral that the Premier League seems so open, and the composition of the top four is kind of quite different to what we've sort of become associated with, in terms of Arsenal on top, Liverpool are second, Spurs are third. It is quite worrying.
City are on the same points as Hull and are below Saints. And yeah. United, James.
United are level on points with Norwich and Stoke. Which, you know, after all the concern after the Premier League's last Champions League campaign, so to speak, it doesn't. There isn't much for encouragement there.
Well, I always think if you do badly at the weekend, it tends to preface a good Champions League performance. So, yeah, maybe they'll fly along through that. Well, anyway, Man City, as we mentioned, they host Uber champions Bayern Munich. Raphael Honigstein joins us now on the line to tell us what awaits for Pellegrini.
Hello, James.
Hi, good to speak to you.
Yeah, it is.
Hey! Now, hey, big midweek for the German sides. Bayern Munich, it was a measured 1-0 success for them this weekend, but they come into this big clash away to Man City in good spirits and possibly also in Lederhosen.
I'm not quite sure that Lederhosen are part of the Champions League outfit as devised by UEFA, but you're right. I mean, they have been wearing these sort of mock Lederhosen outfits, which are a crime against fashion, and perhaps need one or two Oktoberfest beers to make sense. They did celebrate after the 1-0 win at Wolfsburg because they had Monday free, but I think that should be maybe not in good spirits, and maybe that's the wrong word, but they should be sober and confident enough to get a result at the Etihad.
You're predicting a result? What kind of result, though?
Yeah, draw would be seen as acceptable, I think, in this group. Bayern and City, I think, both realise that this is a group that they will be able to wrap up, and it's just down to who will come first. So if Bayern were to get a draw at City, that would put them in a very good position to finish the group on top, and they'd be very happy to take that. But, it's a good test. In the Bundesliga, they've been so dominant that I think they almost need these kind of games to have a more objective measuring stick to see just how well they're doing. Because even a very measured, as you said, or perhaps you should say very average performance was enough to beat a side like Wolfsburg 1-0 quite comfortably.
Good.
So I think the City game will tell us a lot about Pep and also a little bit about City, of course.
Oh, of course. And Mario Götze could be back for this game, is that right?
He'll be back in the squad, but he's very unlikely to start. I think it's also unlikely that he'll play too much, even if he comes on as a late sub. he's been struggling with injury ever since Ramirez, the lover of football, in Mourinho's terms, crashed into him and hurt his ankle ligament in Prague.
All right. Well, now, in other Champions League fixtures for the Germans, Bayer Leverkusen, who face Bayern Munich next Saturday, will be taking on Real Sociedad. Schalke are at Basel. Not an easy game. Not an easy game. And Borussia, who put 5 past Freiburg on the weekend, they play Marseille. Ooh, I bet Marseille are a little bit scared about that one.
They might be. I mean, although Marseille won in the Westfalenstadion a couple of years ago at the same time in the group stage. Dortmund have, of course, evolved since then. They're a much better side. They've hit their stride. I think they also want to make sure that the Napoli game was just a blip and show that they didn't do themselves justice. Klopp won't be on the bench, of course, being suspended. But all these games are interesting because they all have sort of something that goes slightly beyond the game itself. I mean, Leverkusen, of course, need to win after losing at Old Trafford. And also one, Mr. Jogi Löw will be in the stands having a very close look at Stefan Kiesling. And that might well be the game where it'll be decided if there is a future or a way back for Kiesling and the German national team. So it couldn't be a bigger game for him. Mm. And at Schalke, after drawing only 3-3 away to Hoffenheim, all sorts of problems, and indeed this is the subject of my column this week. Jermaine Jones suspended, and all sorts of fear and loathing and worries about the manager just being out of his depth. Shame that it didn't go for David Moyes.
Indeed they should, Rafa. Okay, so it's going to be all good news for the coefficient this week, is it?
I'm not so sure. I think Schalke, in their current state of mind, are capable to get beaten at Basel, where better sides have come undone. Mm. Horst Held, the sporting director, said some of our players were completely out of their minds in the second half at Hoffenheim, and that's the kind of club they are at the moment. Basel looked very, very good against Chelsea, and Schalke might be in trouble.
Raphael Honigstein on a rather creaky chair, I noticed there. In the Borussia Marseille group, of course, the other big game, well, the other game, in fact, is Arsenal hosting Napoli. Arsenal hosting Napoli, the return of Higuain to the Emirates. Ooh, they rested him at the weekend, didn't they, Napoli?
Yeah, he came on briefly in the second half. Yeah, he's had an excellent start to his Napoli career. I mean, he's already been to the Emirates, of course. This season, he was there at the Emirates Cup and was roundly booed, which was a bit irrational.
Did you see him being quite conciliatory to the Arsenal fans? He was saying this week how well they'd spent their money and getting Mesut Ozil, saying lots of very, very nice things about Arsenal in a kind of desperate, please don't boo me again. I don't even understand why you did it first time kind of voice.
Right.
Well, it was quite interesting that, it was a pre-season tournament, of course, so you don't really want to read too much into it, but Napoli played pretty much their full-strength team at the time without Higuain in the first half and were 2-0 up. But at half-time, Arsenal were booed off the pitch. But I think, a lot's changed since then. They've obviously signed Ozil, as Ian mentioned. They've won 9 games in a row in all competitions, which is a remarkable run, really. I mean, I'd say 2013, really, the way they turned things around in the spring and finished the season. The start of this season with the defeat to Villa, it was a bit of a false start, but since then they've been excellent. Mm.
And some of the response after that defeat to Villa now looks slightly over the top, doesn't it?
Yeah. Serge Gnabry, again, he was 1 year old when Arsene Wenger joined Arsenal.
Wow, there you go.
Remarkable, isn't it? He looks quite a player to have uncovered.
I mean, they looked really good again at the weekend. I mean, it's that confidence, isn't it, once it starts to click and key players stepping up. I mean, Ramsey's been fantastic throughout that whole run.
The difference for a young player like Gnabry or Gnabry, have we decided yet? Because I heard a lot of Gnabry.
You decided Gnabry, surely.
Yeah, I thought Gnabry. But anyway, whatever you call him, the difference with a young player coming into a team that is actually confident and not liable to get flustered at the first sign of trouble. Because Arsenal are at both ends of the scale. When they're not making the breakthroughs, they weren't in the first half, they don't sort of lose the plot and go to pieces. And when they are in a position where they concede a late goal and they're under pressure to hold on to a lead, they hold on to a lead. They look a completely different team mentally.
Do they look a complete side? Do they look like a title contender? Ooh,
they look like a title contending team. I'm just not convinced they're a title contending squad.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he spends in summer, in January. I mean, if they go out and spend another sort of 40, 50 million quid, which obviously the fans are inevitably urging them to do. Mm. But if they go out and sign another top-class striker, you think actually they could challenge us?
All right, they may not look like blue-chip title contenders, but is there a team out there that does?
No, not at all. It's wide open.
All right, wide open. Exciting.
Well, that's the thing is about the Premier League looking at Moyes and United and City or whatever. It's kind of a good season to have a bad start, really, isn't it? Because it is so open.
And at the beginning of the season, you might have said that Chelsea would capitalise on that, given that Mourinho was coming back to somewhere that he knew and he knew the players and all the rest of it. Actually, that hasn't happened either. So it's all over the place.
All right. What about Arsenal and Napoli then?
I think it's going to be quite a balanced game because if we go back to Arsenal being legitimate title contenders, I mean there are cracks in that team. You know, what happens if Giroud gets injured? Likewise, certain elements of the midfield and at the back could do with reinforcing. But I mean, it's the same.
Which part of the midfield do you want to reinforce in?
Well, actually, I've been quite impressed. I think we've all focused on Ozil, but Flamini has been an excellent addition in terms of bringing a mentality, a bite back to Arsenal, which they've lacked. But Napoli are quite similar. I think Rafa Benitez has sort of settled on his best 11. He came under his first sort of real criticism in midweek when he heavily rotated. They had 78% possession against Sassuolo and they ended up drawing, was it 1-1?
Bottom of the table.
Bottom of the table, who just lost 7-0. He rotated again at the weekend, but they won against Genoa 2-0. They've got some slight worries in defence because Christian Maggio, the fullback, he's just had a knee operation, so he won't be available. And Raul Albiol, who has really been their sort of standout centre-back so far this season, is a doubt. He came off at half-time against Genoa. He's very good in the air, not that Arsenal or a team renowned for bombing crosses in the box. But
Stoke game.
Yeah, true.
Well, right, interesting. So which side are you falling on this one, James? Tough day for Napoli?
I think it'll be a draw.
Okay. Now, after all of that excitement, we're going to have a little bit of music and then we're back to the Premier League. Sunderland took on Liverpool. Kevin Ball still in charge there of the Black Cats. Liverpool in a quite extraordinary kit. I'm not sure what's the
horrible,
thinking
isn't it?
There.
Harlequin style. I'm not quite sure what the thinking is. It's headache inducing.
It's confused, the thinking, in my opinion. And Suarez returning with a selection of T-shirts to celebrate his various goals.
Indeed, he must have had the kit man working overtime.
Right.
On those but
they obviously know a good T-shirt supplier, Liverpool, based on
this
bulk orders and that. Yeah.
It showed that Sturridge and Suarez probably can play in the same team, didn't it?
It was a joy to watch, wasn't it? Do you know, we never said about Arsenal what delightful football they were playing. Their two goals were magnificent. But one of the other thrills of the Premier League weekend was seeing Sturridge and Suarez, the new SAS.
Indeed. No, I think that showed they can click, and it'll be interesting to see how far they can take that.
Wonderfully selfless play from Daniel Sturridge when he...
Isn't that weird, though? If you watch Daniel Sturridge at Chelsea and you just see him tearing down blind alleys, cutting in and larruping one into the upper tier.
But that's because he's lost that air of desperation, isn't it? You know, he always felt at Chelsea that, he felt like every time he had the ball, he had to score a wonder goal so he could retain his place, whereas now he knows he's...
They love me. They really love me, and they really do, and rightly so. He's looking more and more a complete forward.
Magnificent. As for Sunderland... Well, it was unfortunate to come up against a Liverpool team with Suarez back and indeed banging. Kevin Ball still in place, as I say. Latest on the manager? Still no movement there, is there?
Well, the Poirier talk seems to have subsided slightly. So I think, there was a note...
Steve McLaren's gone now.
Indeed, And there was a note in the programme at the weekend that said all the usual stuff about, taking our time and making sure we cast our net widely and all the rest of it. But, they don't exactly inspire confidence with their choices so far, Ellis Short and Whitburn, so we'll see how that goes.
I think they may just have come to the conclusion that Poirier is a little too similar to what they've just replaced, in a more, watered-down version, obviously, but this is they can't get this wrong. They really can't get this wrong. If that club goes down with the debts that they've got, with the wages that they and the area of the country that they're in, they're just going to explode in a puff of IOU notes.
Wow. Well, next up for them, a horrible run of fixtures, and you can understand why prospective managers might delay a little bit. They've got a terrible run of games coming up, starting with Man United next weekend, although that suddenly looks very winnable, of course, so that match. Interesting. Okay, moving along, White Hart Lane. This was billed as the big game of the weekend. Didn't quite work out that way. Other results proved more dramatic and newsworthy. But the 1-1 between Spurs and Chelsea, was that fair, do you think, Owen?
It was. It was a really good game, and it was a classic game of two halves. Spurs were very strong in the first half. Chelsea made some changes at half-time, including Mourinho being forced to turn to Mata. And they played very well second half until, of course, the Torres sending off.
Well, you've pretty much encapsulated the whole story there. Mata came good and really showed why everyone's been baying for his inclusion.
Absolutely, and made Mourinho eat his words. Of course, Mourinho will say, this is exactly why I did it. He's come back fighting and he showed me what he can do. But, you know, I tend to think he might have done that from the first day of the season.
Well, Mourinho might also say that Torres was extremely unlucky to be sent off, and I think you'd have to agree with that, wouldn't you?
I think that's right, but it's classic Mourinho, isn't it? You know, he sort of said he hammered Vertonghen and said he was a disgrace, said that Torres should never have been sent off, while completely declining to mention the fact that Torres had tried to scratch Vertonghen's face earlier in the game.
He certainly did. Now, is there a risk, and I say is there a risk, there is a risk, I've seen it, I've read it in the papers, that Torres might actually get an increased ban if they use
He might miss the whole of October, so he might,
really?
He might end up missing four Premier League matches, which would be a shame given that this was probably his best performance for an awful long time in a Chelsea shirt.
Well, indeed, everyone's hailing the return of Torres. What exactly about it excited you so much, Owen?
He just looked like he cared for once, and he was, you know, he was fired up, a little bit too fired up perhaps, given that he ended up getting sent off, but all the sort of, you know, the explosiveness that we used to associate with Fernando Torres. It wasn't 100% back, but certainly he was playing at sort of 70-80% of the Fernando Torres that most people remember.
Yeah, and very, very involved in all the play for Chelsea. Wasn't it last season when he had his best game in ages against Man United, then promptly got himself a red card?
Swansea, wasn't it? Was that Swansea?
Yeah. I think there must be the season before when he did that against Man United. It seems to happen a lot.
So he's got form on, yeah.
He gets returning to form and then gets fired up. Right. Okay, but we give Mourinho a bit of stick sometimes, but it does seem like he's done a very good job inside of Fernando's head then.
Seems to be, yeah. And he said one of the things he said after the match was that they're, you know, working on him physically, and they felt that's where he'd been lacking over the last couple of years. And you can probably see that. And, you know, it did look like their bite had returned to his game.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Chelsea are going to be taking on Steaua Bucharest. So that's a trip to Romania, I'm thinking, for that. Steaua Bucharest, of course, won 3-0 in that terrific match against Poli Timișoara over the weekend's remaining leaders, unbeaten indeed in the Romanian First Division. Crikey. Manager in crisis watch, James. Moyes is obviously in the manager in crisis bucket. Chris Houghton was, but a win for him this weekend.
Yeah, a huge win for Houghton, really, because yeah, they needed to get a result against Stoke, because if you look at their fixtures coming up, you know, they've got Chelsea at home, Arsenal away, and then Cardiff at home. You know, I think have surprised many people. So,
but not necessarily on the road, have they, Cardiff? Although they did get that win at Fulham, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
But then, historic win. Bucket.
There you go. Martin Yole, who's occupying most of that bucket.
Yes.
Barney Rone tweeting this morning, this is Monday morning, was going to interview Martin Yole today. Fulham have cancelled. Says Barney.
This is true. I've spoken to Fulham about this, and they insist it's nothing to do with the fact that they're about to sack their manager, but purely to do with the fact that they don't want him to answer lots of questions about the fact he might be sacked.
There's not much to suggest that he's going to stay, is there? I mean, aside from beating Sunderland on day one in a game where I think Sunderland actually had the better of it, they've picked up 1 point since then.
Is it Stoke they've gotten Saturday? If they don't win that, you just think that must be it.
There doesn't seem to
new
be...
New owner, you know, probably getting slightly impatient.
He's got rid of the Michael Jackson statue. He's going to get rid of Martin.
It's like the Ravens leaving the town.
Wow.
Twizzling his tash. Okay.
And there's talk that they've lined up a former Sunderland manager to replace, not that one, sadly, but Martin O'Neill.
That's an interesting choice. I believe there's a connection between people in upper management at Fulham and Martin O'Neill. I can't be 100% sure off the top of my head what that connection is, but I think that's where that story's come from. But it's from, I think, two very good, well-connected journalists in London had that on Sunday, so there may be something in that.
Connections. Like it. Now, one manager who is out the door, the fourth longest-serving manager in the top four English divisions before this weekend, is Nigel Clough. Derby have decided they've had enough, and after a 1-0 defeat, pointedly at Nottingham Forest, he got shown the door. Hey, here's Sporting Intelligence pointing out that club sacking means that only 42, less than half, of 92 managers at English clubs have been in their jobs for more than a year.
Wow.
It's pretty extraordinary, isn't it? And pretty damning, really, in terms of long-term planning at those clubs. But Clough, as you say, has been there a long time. There's two views. One is, you know, this is all a bit harsh, isn't it, early in the season. Mm. But there was also, I was quite interested to see the number of Derby County fans saying, our football's got a bit boring under him. We, you know, the usual, we want more type stuff. I mean, but I think it was harsh, particularly, was as it, you say.
Did he have the squad to do better? They're down in, let's see, mid-table, 14th.
He spent most of his time there dealing with wage budgets being cut every single season and not an awful lot of money to play with. So I think the feeling amongst journalists in that region was it was very, very harsh that he was doing the best with what he could. And remember, every time a season ends, there's three teams with huge parachute payments coming into that division. When you've been down as long as Derby have, which in the great scheme of things isn't actually that long, it's very, very difficult to compete. However, as Owen says, there's an awful lot of Derby fans who've said that tactically he wasn't up to much and that he should have done better with what he had. Modern football.
Right, well, they'll be feeling a lot happier this morning as Steve McLaren has announced as their new manager, who himself had a brief dalliance with Nottingham Forest.
He had a brief dalliance with Derby as well, I think. I think he used to be a coach there, didn't he?
Did he?
Well, under Jim Smith.
Oh, okay. All right. But he had those, what was it, 28 days at Forest last season. Was that the start of last season?
It was close. Yes.
All right. Good appointment.
He's very highly thought of at QPR, where he's been helping out while Harry Redknapp's been recovering from a knee operation.
Right.
There's an awful lot of QPR fans very sorry to see him go.
Oh, and they've been flying along, haven't they? And another victory this weekend. Well, there you go. Well, best of luck to all concerned. In a second or two, we'll get the view of Sidlow in Spain on an absolute monster weekend in Spain.
Hey Jimbo, how you doing?
Hey, how was your weekend of fear and loathing in the Liga?
It was all right, thank you. It was pretty exciting, the Madrid derby on Saturday night, where Atletico Madrid only went and did it again.
They did it again, didn't they? That's 2 in a row.
25 games they've waited to beat Real Madrid, 14 years, not since the turn of the century. 1999 was the last time. And they went and did it again four months later. I worked it out, Jimbo. You know whose fault it is?
It's the Welsh.
It's the Welsh, Jimbo.
It's always the Welsh, Sid.
It's always the Welsh.
Yeah.
So John Toshack was, for those who don't understand that slightly bizarre reference, John Toshack was the Real Madrid manager the last time they were beaten by Atletico Madrid in the league in October 1999. They sacked him soon afterwards. They went 14 years of never losing in the league, and then Gareth Bale made his home debut.
How did Gareth play?
Well, I mean, he was on a hiding to nothing, to be honest, although I suppose by the same token, he also had nothing to lose. He was sent on at half-time, Madrid playing really, really poorly, and put onto the right-hand side. He had a couple of reasonable runs. He was brought down on the edge of the area with what looked like it might be about to open up to be the best opportunity for Madrid. But then the free kick, which is a perfect position for him, actually was taken by Ronaldo and booted into the stands. So, I mean, you wouldn't say that Bale was a problem, but nor was he able to make a huge impact. Atletico were very, very good again.
All right, well, let's talk about Atletico and their extraordinary manager, Diego Simeone, who I don't think that many people would have said he'll be a great manager one day back when he was a player. But my word, what a record he's got. He arrived in December 2011. Since then, he's already picked up three trophies and of course, one of the most special victories ever.
Yeah, I mean, it really is extraordinary what he's done. I think one of the things, it's quite uncomfortable, really, to kind of look into Atletico Madrid, because one of the things that Simeone's done is make all of the cliches true. I mean, his early plans is actually he's evolving into a slightly different into saying slightly different things now. But certainly at the start, it was all about hard work, teamwork, everyone together, no one in the team, spirit, commitment, endeavour, and it was all a bit kind of it all felt a bit vacuous. But what he's actually done is that I think he has really genuine and really push them hard. Atletico Madrid, one of the reasons why that matters is I think that emotionally and politically is probably not quite the right word, but I can't think of another one. So emotionally and politically, they were a weak club. They were a club where there was a division at what's always described here as kind of social level. In other words, fans, board, players, manager, there never seemed to be any kind of sense of communion between them. There never seemed to be any sense that fundamentally what the first team does is what really matters, and everyone has to work towards that rather than towards their own aims. And Simeone has done, I think, a brilliant job in bringing together all of those elements. He was one of the people, I think, had the social power to do that, to be able to take on the club at some levels, to be able to bring the fans into the ambit of the club. And it's worked really, really well. And they are, Ancelotti said actually before the game on Friday in his press conference, that they play the way that Simeone played. Very aggressive, very, very focused, tactically very, very clever indeed. Maybe not always that pretty, although I actually think they're getting prettier to watch this year. They're evolving into something more attacking. And what he's done is just sensational.
Mm. All right, and all this despite selling Falcao, of course, in the summer. They're up there at the top of the table with Barcelona. And for Carlo Ancelotti, meanwhile, all sorts of problems. The fans, some of them chanting Jose Mourinho outside the Bernabeu. Headlines.
Yeah, relatively few, though, and provoked by a TV channel that loves to play on that kind of thing.
All right, and the headlines, meantime, they are all not just in Catalonia, where it was all crisis, first crisis for Ancelotti, but also the Madrid papers were having a bit of a go.
Yeah, they were, and you can see the political position of the two big Madrid dailies quite clearly over the last couple of days. You've got AS, which has become quite critical, not so much with Ancelotti, although Ancelotti as well, but critical with the club at institutional level. The relationship between them and the present Florentino Perez isn't great right now, and you can see that in some of what they're writing. Marca, whose relationship is closer, trying to look for other reasons rather than pointing the finger at the president, and so they're pointing the finger that little bit more at Ancelotti. I think there's a recognition that it might be a bit early to get overexcited, but it's never too early to get overexcited, I suppose, in the Madrid media. And every single game seems to be a definitive judgment on Real Madrid. But it is true that so far, neither the style nor the system convinces. I think Madrid lack a little bit of the control that in theory they were after when they got Ancelotti. And I think we've talked about this before, he might as well have come in with a big sign on his head saying, I am not Mourinho. Mm. And of course that's part of the problem for Real Madrid, is that they go from one model to another as if it doesn't matter, as if it won't take time to bed in.
Right. In the meantime, TV station Cuatro, is it? Running a montage of Real Madrid in the derby with Benny Hill music on top of it.
Well, I must confess, I haven't seen that, but they are fans of Benny Hill music whenever right. something comic is happening. I mean, I think that Benny Hill music isn't really that appropriate for Real Madrid because they were just never that quick.
Right. Like it. Well, they're going to be, is it away to Copenhagen or are they home to Copenhagen?
No, they're home to Copenhagen. I mean, I think the reality is, you know, they got that brilliant start in the Champions League, scoring six in Istanbul. Yeah. I think they'll get through the group comfortably. That's the other thing in all of this. You know, in 1999, the last time that they lost to Atletico Madrid, they were pretty abysmal in the league, Real Madrid, but they did win the European Cup, which, of course, overshadowed everything else. Admittedly, not with Toshek, with Vicente del Bosque, who then came in. Right. And I think by spring, this might look different. They've got very, very good players. But they are confronted with, I think, some relatively important problems at the moment.
Mm. Sid, before we leave you, tell us a little bit about Barcelona's trip to Glasgow to face Celtic in black kits, but without Leo Messi.
Yeah, Messi, who scored a really, really nice goal in Almeria at the weekend and then pulled up after a sprint 3 or 4 minutes later, he's going to be out with a slight muscular problem. And by the way, everybody is saying this is Messi, who never really got muscular problems under Pep Guardiola and is now starting to get them again. And that's obviously a real worry for Barcelona. He will be out for 2 to 3 weeks. I suppose if there's a time to get a 2 to 3 week injury, it is in the week before the international break. In other words, the chances are he'll miss the Celtic game, he'll miss Barcelona's game in the league at the weekend, which I think is via Leaf, although I must confess off the top of my head, I can't remember. And then he'll miss the trip with Argentina for, I think it's 2 international games. Argentina already qualified, I believe. So then he'll be back in time for the derby, the Clásico against Real Madrid. So I suppose, you know, if you're going to have a 2 or 3 week injury, it's not a bad time. And there are one or two suspicious minds who are saying, I reckon it's only a 1 week injury. But hey, 3 weeks is handy because it gets him off playing for Argentina.
All right. But it sounds like they're not terribly worried about the trip to Celtic in the meanwhile.
Well, I mean, of course they are, in the sense that they were beaten there last time. They also very, very complimentary about Celtic in terms of the history that surrounds the club, in terms of the atmosphere and everything else. But obviously on a footballing level, they're not massively concerned. Mm. You know, they certainly do contemplate the possibility that they might not win there, that they could get a draw. But the nature of a Champions League group means that even if that was to happen, as we saw last year, it probably wouldn't be the end of the world.
That's true. All right then, Sid, off you go, write another one. And we look forward to seeing you soon, actually, when you're in town to launch your Fear and Loathing in the Liga opus.
Yeah, I think it's the week commencing 12th or 13th of October. I can't remember which one of those is a Monday, but I think from that week I might be in the UK, yeah.
International week. Nice one, Sid. Speak to you soon.
Quality. Cheers, Jimbo.
Let's talk about Roma, the extraordinary Giallorossi. James, we had the pleasure of watching them, and you know, I know you were tuned in for this as well, as they attempted to make it 6 wins out of 6 at the start of their Serie A season, and boy, did they!
They didn't waste any time, did they?
No.
Straight in there, opened the scoring in 7 minutes, wasn't it?
No.
And then just kept beating them. It was very, very one-sided, very emphatic, and what the hell has happened to Giovinco?
Well, let's talk about Giovinco.
He looked at Arsenal, you know, he was quick and direct. You never knew entirely which direction or what his overall plan was. But here he seemed to have an overall plan. He was moving into space as if there was a strategy behind it.
It was hard not to move into space against that Bologna defence.
They did leave a little open.
Yeah. Giovinco, it's an interesting point. He's interviewed in today's Gazzetta where he says that he has the trust of his manager again. He didn't have that feeling, as the Italians like to say, that feeling with Arsene Wenger. Of course, Rudy Garcia is the man under whom he was great. I mean, Wenger bought him in the first place because he'd won the title at Lille under Garcia and now he's reunited. It's funny how you often get a manager who just seems to be able to unlock a certain player.
Yeah, I mean, he was a member of that double-winning Lille side, which featured so many of the players now we see in the Premier League, Eden Hazard, Matthew Debuchy, Johan Gabay, etc. Yeah, he scored 15 goals in one season under Garcia, 18 in the other. So, you know, I mean, he's now got 3 in his last 2 games for Roma. He's become something of a cult figure among their fans. They already have a nickname for him, which is Ertendine, which is the curtains.
Right.
And it was curtains for Bologna. So...
Yeah, all right. Yeah, excellent. Well, that's good. That's 17 goals they've scored. They've only conceded 1. And the interesting thing, we mentioned Atletico selling off Falcao. And Roma, of course, sold off their top scorer, Osvaldo, and Lamela as well. But it doesn't matter because all the new guys are scoring all the goals. I think more than half of the goals have come from
new arrivals. Well, the remarkable thing is, I guess, they sold their 2 best attackers in Osvaldo and Lamela. They have the best attack in Serie A. They sold arguably their best, most talented defender, Marquinhos, and they have the best defence in Serie A.
So. Goalkeeper went as well?
Yeah.
Or one of them.
It's obviously the answer then. Sell all your best players.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, there's an argument for freshening things up. But appointing the right manager has obviously been a key thing for them. Edmund says, Roma, Scudetto, finally,
Oof. Possibly, I mean, it would be the first time since 2001. They benefit from the fact that they are not playing in European competitions. It's something that Inter are benefiting from. They've also had a very good start to the season.
And those two teams face each other this Saturday in a game which may go some way to answering Edmund's question.
Yeah, because I think particularly with Roma having the best start ever in their history, a lot of people have asked whether they've been really tested so far this season. They've obviously played the derby against Lazio, which they won.
It's a poor Lazio team this year, or at the moment anyway.
Yeah, it's okay-ish. I mean, they're an experienced team. They're just a year older, really. Yeah. And a lot of the new signings haven't made an impact.
Closer's not scoring anymore. Hernandez not scoring anymore. Yeah,
It's still a good team.
Yeah, okay. Now, they're not in Europe. Neither are Inter. But Juve and Milan and Napoli are. We mentioned Napoli already. One thing we didn't mention was the fact that their 2-0 win away to Genoa saw, 6 weeks into the season, Genoa firing their manager, Fabio Liverani. The man they brought in, we're going to go with a new project, brave new manager coming through, 6 weeks later, don't fancy that. We'll go back to the trusted favourite of Gasperini in the 4-3-4. No, 3-4-3. 3-4-3.
Exactly. I mean, he was the guy who got Genoa promoted to Serie A back in 2007. They'd been in the lower leagues for quite a long time, partly because of their owner and his penchant for match fixing, which meant they were
going to be promoted another time. The last game of the season, they were playing the worst team in the division. But why take a chance, was the philosophy from Genoa, who sent a briefcase with €250,000 in it to the Venezia players and was caught doing it, and then they got busted down to the third division.
Yeah, exactly. So, Gasperini is... I mean, Genoa are like a revolving door, not only for they bring in 12 different players every season, but in terms of managers, they often go through 3 a season. Gasperini was the last time they had any kind of stability. I think he was there for 5 years, so much so that the president nicknamed him Gasperson, as though he was some kind of Genoa's Sir Alex Ferguson, because yeah, he'd lasted more than a few seasons. So I think that's what they're aspiring to. They're trying to hope, maybe Gasperini will stick around for some time.
Right, the gas person comes calling then. Excellent, he's back. I mentioned anyway, Napoli in the Champions League. We talk about their clash at the Emirates. Also, Milan, who did beat Samp at the weekend, but looked rubbish. But they've got some big players coming back as they travel to Amsterdam to take on an Ajax side that put 6 goals past their opponents the weekend, the Go Ahead Eagles. 6-0. Italian press say they scored 6, but they don't scare us. And they're very heartened by the news that Montolivo's back for Milan, De Sciglio's back for Milan, and, of course, Balotelli can play because it's only in Serie A that he's suspended. So, yeah, big game, though, for Allegri. They all are these days. Let's talk a little bit more, though, about Juventus, who take on Galatasaray. And this is really interesting because, A, Tevez is almost certainly out, I think, after a crunching tackle.
He's a major doubt.
Major doubt.
He tweeted a photo of his ankle.
Right.
Former Juve player, because it was the Turin derby on Sunday. Juventus won 1-0. A reducer was put on him by Ciro Immobile. And
as Raphael Honigstein said, he was immobilised. Yeah, nicely. Anyway, so it looks like he won't be playing in that game, so that's a bit of a blow for Juve. Galatasaray, meantime, all the unrest last weekend after the clash with Besiktas, they then fired Fatty Terim, and it's now official, isn't it? Roberto Mancini's coming
indeed,
in.
Indeed, yeah. They've had to notify the stock market, which they have to do in Turkey. They're in talks with Mancini, and it looks inevitable that he will come in with that same backroom staff that caused all the trouble at Manchester City. So it'll be very interesting.
Oh, nice. Okay. But not featuring David Platt?
Not featuring David Platt, sadly.
Oh, okay. €5.5 million a year they're talking about?
With hardly any tax as well. I think the tax rate there is very, very low, which is why they've been able to bring in so many big-name players.
Given that he was in talks with Monaco before and now he's gone to Galatasaray, it obviously favours a low tax rate. Right.
Interesting. And he does have a clause apparently in his contract that if the Italian national side come calling, he can abandon ship and go and do that.
But to an extent, he's got to rebuild his reputation as well. It depends how you view his tenure at Manchester City. On the one hand, he did an extraordinary job; he won the league for them. On the other, he went out under a little bit of a cloud, didn't he? So it'd be very interesting to see how he does now.
It's an interesting decision because, as you say, it's quite it's a delicate moment in his managerial career, so to speak. He could be defined by his next coaching position. I mean.
But he can make a lot of money in the meantime.
He can.
I mean, legacy, money.
It does take him out the firing line, though, doesn't it? Because it's Galatasaray. They're obviously very, very well funded and very strong. So success there is going to be a little easier. But if it does go wrong on a global stage, it's not going to be noticed so much as if it went wrong at, say, a big German team or something like that.
Yeah, I think that was part of the rationale why Drogba and Schneider went there. They thought we could get paid very well, but also it wouldn't necessarily tarnish the perception of us in the wider football.
Although they're it's like at the end of their career, aren't they? Whereas Mancini technically is still very much near
on
the beginning.
That money, he could retire now, couldn't he?
He replaced Terim at Fiorentina as well. He's replacing him.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
And he did very well there at Fiorentina after Terim.
He did, right? Yeah.
But this is going to be a very tough clash for him. Well, away to Juventus.
That's what I was going to say, because they lost to Real Madrid 6-1. I mean, if they lose to Juventus, it's going to be very uphill for them to get out of that group, which leaves him with the Turkish Super League. So,
luckily, they're bringing in a manager who's got brilliant record in the Champions League. Oh, hang on. Right.
And obviously, Mancini's background with Inter.
A popular figure in Turin.
Well, Inter were the team that benefited most, some people would say, from the Calciopoli scandal. Juventus were relegated, of course, and they then went to win 5 Scudetti in a row. So, 3 under Mancini. So, there's no love lost there. Although, he's very open-minded. He says, if the opportunity to coach Juventus came in the future, he'd take it. Likewise.
Providing the tax was favoured. Okay, well, that's going to be quite a game. I mean, big games all over. What are you going to watch on Tuesday and Wednesday? Because you can only pick one.
Manchester United for the Rubbernecker potential and Chelsea also. I mean, Chelsea in the same position, really. If they lose again, then it starts to look quite tricky. I mean, I think you can't, if you lose your first two games, you're looking at an uphill battle to qualify, aren't you? Right. I mean, and that would be a very difficult position for them to be in.
Right. Ian?
I'll be watching Arsenal and Manchester City because it's my job, and if I don't, my editor will shout at me.
All right, and Green Street, of course.
Naturally, of course, naturally. I'm going to try and prolong this podcast so that I don't have to go back.
Right, we haven't any of the left-field hipster choices yet, James. What have you got? Are you going to plump for Porto Atletico?
That does sound good. I mean, it's a shame
CSK,
that
CSKA, Victoria Pilsen?
No.
Anderlecht Olympiacos?
No.
All right. What are you going to... What was it, Tony? Green Street 2.
I haven't seen any of the Green Street opus, so...
What are you doing this afternoon? Come on over. I'll get a cab.
Right. And on that note, that's where we conclude today's Football Weekly. We'll be back on Thursday. Do join us for that. Enjoy the football in the meantime. Many thanks to the returned producer, Ben, James Horncastle, Ian McIntosh and Owen Gibson. And look forward to speaking to you on Thursday.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 20% off in September by going to squarespace.com and using the offer code Guardian.